Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Prospect Blueprint Podcast. I'm Kelly Kleinman. Well, currently there are over 40 million youngsters playing organized sports. Yeah, you heard me right. 40 million, probably a little bit more than that. Amateur athletics has become a $15 billion a year industry. Everybody's gotten into the act. There's a lot of money to be made. There's tournaments and travel organizations for every sport, and picking a specific sport by sixth grade or earlier has actually become commonplace. Most of all, the need for coaching is an all-time high. The question is, who are these coaches? And that's why we have our next guest. We're going to kind of clear the air. We're going to show those out there that there's a way to make coaches better coaches. And his name is Ruben Yavis, and the organization he works with is the Positive Coaching Alliance. These folks are on the front lines, and they work with coaches. Ruben, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Kelly. Appreciate it. Happy to be here with you.
Sorry for that long introduction, but there's a huge need for quality coaches out there. I've experienced, and we've all experienced, some of the issues with coaches just aren't trained to do it. It's just dads sometimes volunteering their time and coaches that really don't know what they're doing. They don't interact well with the kids. Give us a 20-story elevator pitch on the Positive Coaching Alliance.
Yeah, so Positive Coaching Alliance is a nonprofit organization with the mission of making youth and high school sports the most productive, positive experience it can be for everybody involved, okay? Certainly the young athletes, but we don't stop there. You know, you mentioned these coaches. The vast majority of coaches in this country are volunteers. You know, we want them to have a good experience too. Parents, you know, let's have a good experience with this, and the administrators that make sports possible. So we're primarily a training organization. We train those groups and equip them with building a culture that allows everybody to have a positive experience.
Give us a who's who list of the affiliations that you're involved with. It's pretty impressive. And by the way, I saw Dusty Baker in there. Dusty used to be good friends with my cousin who passed away, but they were pretty tight. And I remember running into Dusty at an exhibition game and mentioning, "Hey, Dusty, you know my cousin Mike? Yeah, how's Marco doing?" Back in the day. He's a great guy.
Oh, what an amazing guy, you know. So humble and so real and personable. So, I'm here in Fresno, California. I'm going to start with, you know, just here in the Bay Area, Dusty Baker, Coach Melvin of the Oakland A's, Steve Kerr. Phil Jackson is our national spokesperson, and he has been for probably 20 years, never received a penny from PC, but he believes in what we're trying to do. He would want his own grandkids and great grandkids to have the kind of experience that we're striving for. Julie Foudy in the world of soccer, Summer Sanders from Olympic swimming, Kim Oden from volleyball, Barry Zito from baseball, Carol Dweck, the psychologist from Stanford University, Jerry Porras, a researcher in great organizational structure. That's a long list. And then the other part of it is the actual organizations that partner with PCA. And we have local partnerships, but I'm just going to rattle off some of the national partnerships, some of the national organizations. Some of them are governing bodies that we work with: AAU, AYSO, Boys and Girls Club of America, Junior NBA, Little League of America, the LPGA, Major League Baseball, U.S. Club Soccer, U.S. Lacrosse, USA Baseball. I can keep going, but you know,
those are big names.
Yeah.
I said it was an impressive list. You're not disappointing me. What got you involved with the organization? You've been there a long time.
So when Jim Thompson founded PCA in 1998, he founded the organization at Stanford University. And I was coaching the men's volleyball team there at the time. And one of the first groups that Jim Thompson got in front of, Ted Leland, our athletic director at the time, he had provided Jim Thompson with a small office. He literally cleared out an equipment room And Jim turned it into his first PCA office. And one of the first groups that Jim came and shared his vision with was the Stanford athletic department coaching staff. So he's in front of, gosh, I don't know if it was Tyrone Willingham at the time or, you know, Mike Montgomery, Tara Vanderveer. And he's telling us about what he wants to do. And it resonated with many, many of us, and including me. I immediately reached out to Jim and, you know, said, hey, let me know how I can help and support. You know, what you're doing is great. What Stanford Athletics is doing is great. But you know what you're doing, that's really big time, you know, and the challenge that Jim Thompson took on to try to transform the culture of youth sports in this country. People thought he was crazy to even try it. And so I offered to join. And then, so when I transitioned out of the coaching position at PCA, Jim Thompson asked me to join him and join his small staff at that time. There were just four or five of us.
Now, is this organization limited just to coaches?
Absolutely not. The name is Positive Coaching Alliance, and so some people do think we work with everybody involved in youth and high school sports. You know, the four primary groups are the coaches, the athletes themselves, the administrators, whether it's a high school athletic director or whether it's a little league board of directors, so the administrators, and then very importantly, the parents of the young athletes also. We provide training and resources for all four of those groups.
Well, understand, I'm asking some of the questions that somebody who is not familiar with your organization is going to ask. They sound fairly simple, but let's make sure that everybody fully understands what you're doing because it's so important. So let's get into exactly what your organization does do. Let me say that again. Organization does too, and why we need everybody to get involved with the PCA. Now, you guys offer a wide slate of online courses, live group workshops, and you've got a treasure trove of online video. How do you market everything, and how do you get this out into the public so they understand exactly what you have to offer?
Yeah, well, a couple of primary ways. One is we have a very user-friendly website that people can go and learn lots of things about PCA. We call ourselves PCA, right, for short. How to get involved, either because you're on the board of a youth sports organization and you want some help in shaping the culture of your youth sports organization in good direction, whether you're a first-time coach and you're about to have your first preseason parent meeting and you're wondering what you should include. You know, so we've got a great website, and it includes how to get involved as a PCA trainer, who to contact about partnerships. So we have the website, but then we also have a small staff that does outreach that reaches out to local schools, youth sports organizations, and you know, lets them know what PCA is about, what we have to offer, how we can be of help and support. And, you know, so that's kind of the approach we take to letting people know that about our services.
Well, you know, I don't think this is a rhetorical question so much, but shouldn't these courses be compulsory considering the current state of our conflict-obsessed culture?
Well, yes. But, you know, so again, so many coaches, you know, and some organizations and some schools in particular do make our training mandatory, especially for their coaches. It's a little easier to mandate it for coaches than it is, say, for parents. Yeah. But some organizations do that too. And, you know, the parents say, well, I'm busy that night. I can't come to the workshop. And they say, well, here's the link so you can take the course online. You know, we find ways to, there's a way to get PCA training, even when it's mandatory and the workshop that your organization is running, you're busy that night. But yeah, you know, what kind of training do teachers go through to work with our children, you know, to supervise our children, to keep them safe physically, emotionally, you know, to gain expertise in how to develop them as students and as people, they go through a lot, you know, and we require credentialing and certificates and licenses. And yet in most cases in sports, none of that is required. And so we do think it's reasonable at the very least a youth sports coach to go through a 2-hour workshop where an organization like PCA has taken a huge body of research-based information and tools and condense them into a 2-hour package. Mm-hmm. And at the very least, you've got that fundamental base of training before you get out there. Well, we love it when organizations make it mandatory. We don't require it to be mandatory. We work with anybody who wants to receive PCA training.
You have a staff. I would think that it's a fairly large staff. I understand you're looking for somebody in Southern California or something along those lines. But is there not any reach out? I mean, I would think that I see a lot of issues, quite frankly, with coaching and with umping. We, for example, in my area, we're facing an issue because we can't find enough umpires for high school games. They catch so much flack from parents and coaches alike that people are just shying away from it, and in youth sports specifically. So how are your classes structured or your courses structured, and what kind of curriculum do they cover to be able to train and preach best practices to some of these coaches who they don't do it for a living, but they come back from work, they're moody, their kids maybe not performing the way they want, they just have an attitude problem, but they need the coaches, so the guy's, he's a coach. What do you have to offer these people to kind of change their ways and take them along from the bad path that they're on onto the positive coaching path?
So first of all, we try to make our training dynamic and fun and enjoyable. I mean, there's such a thing as learning without being bored or being miserable and feeling like you're at the dentist office. Now, with that said, the vast majority of people who are at a PCA workshop are not there voluntarily. They're there because, you know, they it was required or highly recommended or, you know, and
they got in trouble.
There's some that have gotten in trouble and it's like a remedial thing. but quite honestly, Kelly, you know, the youth sports organizations that partner with PCA, many of them are modeled youth sports organizations and provide a wonderful experience for their communities. And they want to keep getting better and they want to stay ahead of the curve and stay sharp. So it runs the gamut. There's organizations that recognize, hey, we need some outside help, and there's organizations that are excellent and want to stay excellent. We call it a partnership, and at the heart of a partnership with a school or a youth sports organization is a set of workshops, and we customize that to the size of the organization, the needs of the organization. Some organizations first year, you know, want to learn, we'll have you do a workshop for our coaches the first year, see how it goes. And if we like that, then we'll expand next, you know, so, but we do like what we call a systems approach, where we try to get these four groups on the same page, executing their unique roles, but in harmony, all working in the same direction. And I mentioned them earlier. They're the leaders. We want leaders to understand the importance of culture and the importance of defending the culture that they create. Okay, so leadership. We call a positive coach a double goal coach. Two goals. Goal number one, some people are really surprised that this is goal number one that PCA preaches for a positive coach. Try to win. It's sports. At most levels, it's competition. It's, you know, some groups you don't turn on the scoreboard till they're 6 or they're 8 or whatever, fine. But once the scoreboard's on, you know, it's sports, you try to win. But there's a second and more important goal for a double goal coach, and that is teaching the right life lessons through the sports experience. Mm-hmm. Okay? That's the second and even more important goal. Double goal coach. Parents, getting them playing their role. Parents sometimes get confused and they start coaching, even though they're in row 14 of the bleachers, and nobody cares what they have to say. They're telling their son to run or shoot, or they're telling their daughter to get back on defense, or they're questioning the coach's strategies. We want parents to be, we call it second goal parent, Kelly. Second goal, because we want parents to leave that first goal, the pursuit of victory, to the participants, the athletes and the coaches. Where parents can contribute the most to a positive sports culture is by reinforcing the life lessons, focusing on the second goal, the life lessons goal, reinforcing the life lessons that the sport and their child's coach are trying to teach. Okay, and then finally, the athletes themselves. Our athlete model is that of a triple impact competitor. A triple impact competitor is committed to making themselves better, but they don't stop there, because they care a lot about making their teammates, those around them, better. But they don't stop there. And this is what truly separates some of the great ones. They care about making their sport better. By the way they conduct themselves on and off the field, in and outside of a uniform, they actually elevate the sport that they play. Triple impact competitor. So that is our approach. We think that when we get all of those four groups working towards the same things, we end up with what's called a development zone. A development zone is contrasted to a win at all cost culture, the professional sports model, where it's all about winning and making money. Well, we don't think youth sports, even though we embrace competition in the pursuit of victory, we don't think that's the bottom line. The bottom line is indeed development. It's growth as an athlete and as a person. We call that a development zone.
You know, and there within lies an issue, because there's so many travel teams where there's a win at all cost situation, because a fella's making a living coaching that team, running that organization. I'm going to play devil's advocate. I sort of believe what I'm about to say to a small extent, and I'll explain that in a minute, but I want you to react to this.
Sure.
Why can't winning be the primary goal? Show me a team that never wins, and I'll show you a team that's not having fun. Plus, show me an athlete that hasn't experienced the feeling of winning, and I'll show you an athlete that doesn't know how to win.
So winning and experiencing winning is very important. An athlete who doesn't get to experience winning, or who doesn't get to experience competition even, I'll back it up to that, we think is not having a complete experience. One of the reasons sports is such a great place to learn life lessons is because of the competitive element. The fact that there, at the end of the day, there is a winner and a loser. Mm-hmm. So when we ask parents, when we get with parents, we ask them to talk about, what do you want your child to get out of the sports experience? And at least when they're with us, Kelly, they usually don't say they want them to win. They usually say, we want them to learn how to bounce back from defeat. We want them to learn teamwork. We want them to learn how to respect others. They say all these great things that sports can indeed help their children grow in. But if we want our kids to learn how to bounce back from defeat, what has to happen? They have to lose at some point. So just like I said, a kid that doesn't experience winning isn't getting the full experience. The kid who doesn't experience losing isn't getting the full experience either, and they're missing out on some life learning opportunities. So like these leagues where we have drafts and we try to stack our team, we're totally working, the ideal situation in an in-house league is where the teams are relatively balanced, and the perfect scenario is everybody goes 500 and they experience success and failure, winning and losing at the same. Now, that would rarely happen, but So Kelly, we think pursuing victory, and gosh, if you're a professional coach, a paid coach, you can, like you said, you sports coaches who are living depends on it. We acknowledge that if you don't win enough, you're not going to stay in business. Okay. But boy, everybody we talk to, they tell us that, in youth sports, winning is not—it's not the bottom line. It has this much importance in t-ball. and it has this much importance. I'm using my hands. People will be able to see Zoom. It has this much importance when it's varsity, high school varsity. And yet the bottom line is still development, growth. Even the ones who go pro, Kelly, you know this, even the ones who go pro, their career is going to end someday. And they're going to have more life as a retired competitive athlete than they have as a competitive athlete. And has the youth experience prepared them for that? And for those of us like me, who had no chance of going, and whose competitive career ended much earlier, what's in it for me? Because I ain't going pro. 5'9" bald guys don't go pro, in my sport, volleyball. So, What's in it for all the kids? And are we serving all the kids, not just the top 2% at the under 8 age group, who probably are not going to be the top 2% at the under 16 age group?
Yeah. Well, along the lines of that winning losing conundrum thing, follow me on this one, because it's something that I practiced when I was coaching. I just stepped out of coaching this year, actually, because my kids are going to Santa Clara. And by the way, we have former Stanford coaches. The Stanford coach was a Mark Marquis for 40 years.
Oh, is he coaching at Santa Clara now?
Well, he's over there in the athletic department, and he's very active with our baseball department, the club. That would be Rusty Filter and John Karsich, who are the coaches over there now.
Coach Marcus is the one I know, and what a class act.
Legendary.
I got to share a suite of offices. Back when I was a women's volleyball assistant coach at Stanford, we shared a suite of offices with the baseball staff.
Yeah, it's a hell of a staff. We're pretty excited to get going when we get going. So here's my question, and it's a bit rhetorical, but I want to get your opinion on it. So is it easier to have a coach and a player set individual goals per player privately before a game so the player does get a sense of a win even if the team loses? And I'll give you a few examples. A soft-hitting softball player taking a pitch count to 6, or just putting the ball in play a couple times, or a track athlete improving on a personal time, perhaps a football player getting in on at least maybe 3 tackles instead of 2. They may not win, but they set an achievable goal and they're able to reach it.
Yeah.
So there is a sense of win and victory. They've achieved something. What do you think of that?
I think it's great.
It's not that great, because there are issues when teams aren't playing well. That's when a lot of
Well, Kelly, you know what though? Ironically, some great coaches of winning teams use the same strategy. Our goal is not, John Wooden was famous for not talking about the results. Our goal is to execute our 2-2-1 full court press, at an 80% rate. Our goal is to shoot 50% from the field. John Wooden broke things down, and some great coaches do. Now, we at PCA, we take it a step further. Okay. If you're playing the game, we think everybody should try to win the game. Okay. Not at all cost, but you try to win. Okay. And then, yes, you have intermediary goals. And for the player, the player who's never gotten a base hit all season, a very realistic goal to celebrate would be making contact, a mature, wise coach and mature and wise second goal parents would celebrate that as much or more so than the kid who hit his 4th home run of the season, Now, Kelly, you have to be careful though, because even some of these goals that you're talking about, the examples you gave me and that I've talked about so far, aren't fully under the control of the athlete and aren't necessarily achievable. So we could set the goal to make contact during this game. At the end of the game, the kid may not have made contact, and that can be demoralizing. So we go a step further and we have something called effort goals. Effort goals are virtually entirely under the control of the athlete. So an effort goal would be, I'm going to arrive early to practice and take 10 swings off the tee, 10 extra swings off the tee. Okay, much more under my control. Not that I'm going to hit the ball off the tee. I'm going to take the 10 swings. Mm-hmm. An effort goal would be that if I walk, if I get a base on balls, because bad hitters can walk. If I get a walk, I'm going to sprint to first base under my control. Effort goal. I'm the right fielder. I'm the lousiest player, and the coach has put me in right field. So my effort goal is every time there's a throw to first base, I'm going to be behind the first baseman backing up the throw. So Kelly, those kinds of goals, in addition to the ones you're talking about, those are the ones that really raise the chances of every kid getting what you called a win. And that is super important, that every kid has a chance to come away from any practice or competition with a win. Kelly, are you familiar with the name Joe Ehrman from Baltimore, former NFL player? He is he was named by Parade Magazine as America's most important coach, because he is a double goal coach. He's a positive coach, and he's a football high school football coach, and he's all about he coaches almost all boys. I don't know if he's ever coached a girl, but he talks about building men for others, and he professes the concept of coaches creating a win for every team member every day. That's what you're talking about too.
Yeah. I like the achievable victories. Go out there and give me 10 swings off of a tee, you know, get stretch for another 20 minutes, you know, get yourself prepared for a game before the game. That's a win. I'm with you on that one, but let's get into the mental aspect. So those are physical things that anybody can do. What are some steps that need to be taken to create a positive culture around team sports? On some level, I would assume that one model fits all, but so parents have expectations, coaches have expectations, players have expectations.
Yeah. So I told you about the single goal leader who focuses on culture, double goal coach, second goal parent, triple impact competitor. There's also three primary principles of positive coaching, but they don't only apply to coaching. They apply to all four of the models. The principles of positive coaching are mastery, and we call it the ELM, E-L-M tree of mastery. And it's a way to define success and maximize success by not obsessing with the scoreboard. Okay, instead of focusing on the scoreboard and results and comparing ourselves with others and mistakes being a bad thing, the ELM tree of mastery principle is about effort, again, under control, learning and improve. The L is for learning, E for effort, L for learning, M for mistakes are okay. Some coaches, you know, they go, what? Sports? Mistakes are okay? But the coaches that are teachers get it. And most coaches eventually get it too, that in order to give, if you're going to give great effort, if you're going to maximize learning and improvement, mistakes should be a part of the process. Mm-hmm. You walk into a classroom, if no students are making mistakes, there's probably not a lot of learning going on. They're not being challenged. They already know it. Well, the same is true in sports, you know, and so it's not a question of whether mistakes are going to happen in sports. It's how we respond to them. And do we, how are we on the next play after a mistake? And what do we do with the mistake to turn it into a learning? So the ELM tree of mastery is one principle. The second principle is filling emotional tanks. We all have emotional tanks. Okay. We perform better. We learn better when our emotional tanks are full. And coaches have been notorious at being tank drainers. You know, the old military style, berating kids for dropping the ball, berating kids for missing their serve. Most of the kids aren't trying to make mistakes, and they're not happy that they've made a mistake or failed. So coaches, what can we do? If we want our athletes to perform their best and learn their best, we actually want to do everything we can to keep their emotional tanks full. We don't have control always of what the level of the emotional tank is when they arrive. Life goes on outside of sports, home, school, relationships. But when we get them, what can we do to take their emotional tank level and raise it? Because it's going to be better performance, better learning, feeling, and more enjoyable. Finally, Kelly, the third principle is honoring the game, honoring the game. And we say that honoring the game gets to the roots of positive competition. Root stands for five key areas we always show respect for: rules, opponents, officials. That's a tough one. Respect for officials, respect for teammates, and respect for self. Most people get those intuitively, Kelly. The one that sometimes folks don't understand what PCA means is respect for self. What we mean is practicing what you preach, not just expecting others to respect the officials, not just expecting others to honor the game, but the coach leads the way by modeling that through my own actions. So those three principles. That's one answer to your question. There's if you repeat the question, I could tell you a little more about it. You know what I wanted to add, Kelly? Do you mind if I keep going?
No, keep going. Sure.
Okay. So that's part of our strategies, the principles. But then we also share tools, proven tools, that help bring these principles to life. So if we want kids to be good at bouncing back from mistakes, okay, the M in Elm. If we want kids to be good at bouncing back from mistakes, it's been shown that a mistake ritual really helps. A mistake ritual is a physical gesture accompanied by a phrase that communicates to myself and others that I understand that I'm allowed to make mistakes. I'm in an environment where mistakes happen. And secondly, that I'm putting the mistake behind me and I'm focusing on the all-important next play. I'm not living in the past. I'm present. I'm moving on. Well, our favorite mistake ritual is the flush. What do we do on this team with mistakes? We flush our mistakes down the drain and gone. There have been Major League Baseball teams and an Olympic softball team who actually had a toy commode in the dugout to bring this mistake ritual to emphasize it. And they were taught, when you make an error or have a bad at bat, you go flush that mistake.
Let it go. That's important. That's extremely important, because if you strike out or I use the baseball analogies all the time.
Short memory.
You can't bring it out to the field because you're going to be obsessing with it and you're going to make it an error in the field. You've got to understand that there's two parts of the game. There's the mental and the physical. Handle the mental and the physical will come.
Yeah, and really, you know, you asked about the mental side. Really, almost all of PCA training has to do with the mental part of sports. I mean, we don't teach coaches how to run infield practice. We don't teach coaches how to run a power play in hockey. We don't do that. It's really all about the mental side of coaching and competing.
We're going to change gears just a little bit, switch gears, I should say. Now, it's the PCA's belief that kids should play as many sports as possible and not settle on just one. Why is that important? I mean, we hear it all the time from high-level coaches, yet many high school coaches prefer their players to focus just on one sport since it's their job that's on the line. I'm with you. I think that they should play multiple sports if they can. At least get out there with your friends. It doesn't have to be an organized sport, and do something different. Can you clarify PCA's take on that and why is it important?
Yeah, and I'll try not to get too fired up here about that one, Kelly. You know what? If it's about me as the coach, yeah, I want my athletes playing one sport. I want them playing my sport. I want them in my gym, and I want it 365. You know, and I decide when they rest or they get to go ride a skateboard. Okay. If it's about the youth, then the opportunity for multiples, and I take it beyond that, multiple sports and multiple activities, you know, so the kid that, you know, during December, I want a break from soccer and I want to play the piano, PCA is all for that. So now, PCA, as far as a sports specialist, oh, by the way, and why? All the experts and all the pros, they all talk about the value of multiple. Most of those guys in the NFL and in the NHL, they played more than one sport into high school. Some of them, even their senior year, were still playing more than one sport. John Elway played football and baseball at Stanford, you know? So, and then there's the health factor, you know, overuse injuries, and playing the same sport year round has been shown to raise injuries for young athletes. So it's considered healthier physically and mentally to do more than one sport. Now at PCA, if a 10-year-old loves tennis and that's what they want to do, and it's their desire to play tennis year round, we're actually okay with that. We don't recommend it, but we're actually okay with it. What we're not okay with is the tennis coach saying, if you're going to play in my club, I don't want you playing soccer 3 months out of the year. That's what we're not okay. We're not okay with kids being pressured to play one sport.
Pressured.
Yeah. You know, the reality is that at a certain point, and it's not great that it's evolved this way, but the reality is at a certain point that if you want to make the varsity, you got to play the sport off season. You know, you've got to go to the AAU tournaments in the summer, or you got to go to the club volleyball stuff. And you know, kids and families have difficult choices to make there. We just want it to be the athlete's choice and not because they're pressured to do it.
Yeah, that makes sense. Not to mention, if the kid loves a sport, the parent should definitely flow with it as opposed to fight it and force them into the sport that they preferred as a youth.
Yeah, yeah. Like the volleyball dad whose child keeps picking up a football and, wait a minute, what about volleyball, you know? No, it's not, okay, my time's over. This is my son's story. It's no longer my story.
Well, you know, there's some of us out there who read Malcolm Gladwell's book, Outliers. And he used the hockey scenario, Canadian hockey, and he broke down, you know, you're familiar with it, you know,
it's fascinating.
Why and when you have to be born and the amount of effort and practice time that you have to put into a sport to become an expert, or the amount of time you have to put into anything to become an expert. And it was 10,000 hours. So with my kids at age 5.5 or 6, I felt that the time, the clock started ticking at that point. So we must have 25,000-30,000 hours of practice time at least. But I knew my kids were a little bit smaller than the others, so I knew that we were really going to have to work extra hard, and they have maintained that work ethic. But they have also done martial arts for a long time. So I do see the importance of that, and I do agree with PCA's belief that you shouldn't pressure a kid into a sport that they don't want to play. But certainly if they want to put a lot of time and effort into something to get great at it because they take pride in it and they love it, immerse yourself.
Yeah. And you know, Kelly, some people take the other side too far too, you know, the overscheduling. They've got their kid playing not just three sports in a year. They got them playing four or five sports in a year. Plus they're in the band and they're in the church youth group leadership. And mom and dad have got the shuttle going back and forth, and they can't make the full commitment to any one of the activities. They're overscheduled, they're stressed, they're trying to get homework done. That can be maybe even more harmful than the pressure to specialize is the overscheduling.
I've seen them. They're out there.
And mom and dad, we expect them to be a star in all of them, right?
They
can't be mediocre in any of them. They gotta be great at all of them.
Yeah, those are the tiger moms, right? Is that what they call them? So you were a coach. What's your most memorable coaching experience growing up, and why, or through your career?
Memorable? So, there are so many wonderful coaches out there. There's so many wonderful ones, and usually when I talk to people and they reflect back on their coaches, they have fond memories of most of them.
But what's yours?
Because and so mine is awesome. Mine is, I grew up at the Goleta Boys and Girls Club. It was the little local clubhouse behind the elementary school. Every day when school got out, I went straight to the clubhouse. And we played a lot of sports there, but we also played billiards and checkers. There was a crafts room. There was a library. We even spent a little bit of time in the library. They took us on camping trips. I mean, my first time to Zion National Park was on a Boys and Girls Club camping trip. The clubhouse director was also one of the sports coaches. His name is Sal Rodriguez. I'm still in touch with him to this day. Sal must be nearing 80 now. But Sal taught us how to play sports and how to compete, but he cared about us much more than beyond what we could do on the basketball court or on the football field. He encouraged us to think about, you know, what else are you going to do besides, you know, play volleyball, Ruben? You know, what do you think about college? You think you might be, you know, he definitely wanted us to win, but more importantly, wanted us to learn the right life lessons through sports.
Yeah. Those are the best coaches, the ones that they motivate you, they inspire you, but they don't hurt you. They're generally sometimes they have a slightly softer touch, but different athletes respond different coaching styles. If I had a guy who took out his dentures and threw him across the room and smashed him into the chalkboard, I was okay with that too. Actually, I was probably better with that as
well. Now, you know, it's interesting because as fondly as I remember Sal, probably if you ask me what moment of coaching do you remember the most,
yeah,
it was the time when Sal got on me because we were in a drill. And I was the point guard, and I was bringing the ball up court and initiating the play. And my teammate, who's guarding me in practice, was dominating me. And I couldn't initiate the play. I couldn't get by him. I was turning the ball over, and I was getting frustrated. And I'm under my breath going, yeah, I'm, damn it, you know, I'm starting to swear it under my breath. I'm going, and I, you know, darn it, Sal, you know, and Sal turned to me and said, Ruben, what do you want me to do about it? And he called me on it. I was blaming Sal because I couldn't get past my defender, you know? And I shut up and I sucked it up. And I learned a nice life lesson there that, you know, that I got to take ownership of my own success and failure. Sal's going to help me. He's going to support me. But if I fail, it's not because of Sal.
Ruben, does the Positive Coaching Alliance do any speaking engagements? Do you book some of the people that are involved in it? How does that work? How do they get that message out there to larger groups?
Typically, no. You know, we have this illustrious National Advisory Board, but we're not a speaking bureau, a speaking engagement. And that's those folks, that's not their role. Their role is to advise us, guide us, lend credibility, help us with you know, the workshops that we develop and what, you know, hey, we've only got 2 hours with these coaches, you know, what should be in there? Yeah. Some of our board members will get involved with special events, whether it's a PCA event or one of these national partners. Our training, our workshops, we don't consider them speaking engagements. We consider them learning experiences. We consider them workshops and, you know, as the director of training, the trainers under me, they hear from me when they use the word presenter or presentation or audience, because I don't want them to use those words. You know, you're the trainer, they're the participants. Yeah. This is not a presentation. It's a workshop.
It's like sales training. Exactly.
Okay.
So you guys are a nonprofit. How can the good folks reach out and send a contribution your way?
Thank you for asking. Sure. Hey, Kelly, you know, I think the easiest way is to visit positivecoach.org. Positivecoach, all one word, .org, because there's a .com and, you know, and you'll see on the landing page, there's a red navigation strip across the top half of the page. And one of them, and it's pretty bright, it says donate. And so the fastest way to contribute financially to PCA is go to that website, click on the donate. You can explore where you can direct your funding. You have different giving options. We'll tell you what $100 gift will allow PCA to do. We'll tell you what $100,000 gift will allow PCA to do. But that's the easiest way, and appreciate you asking, and we welcome everybody to support in that way.
Absolutely. Ruben the Aves, Positive Coaching Alliance. He's been there since the beginning, and he's doing a hell of a job. We really appreciate you coming on with us. This is the Prospect Blueprint. And share, like, comment, but most of all, subscribe to the Prospect Blueprint. You'll see us on virtually every podcast network, and of course, we're on a YouTube channel. If you want to see how wonderful looking these two gentlemen right before you are right now, you can see us in living color and some of the great stuff that I add to the conversation in the way of video and some still pictures. That makes it a little bit more compelling. Ruben, again, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome, Kelly. Thank you.
And we'll see y'all.